A Clockwork Orange, Disc 6.
I had a real horror show night's sleep, brothers, with no dreams at all, and the morning was very clear and like frosty, and there was the very pleasant like von of breakfast frying away down below. It took me some little time to remember where I was, as it always does, but it soon came back to me, and then I felt like warm and protected. But as I laid there in the bed, waiting to be called down to breakfast, it struck me that I ought to get to know the name of this kind, protecting and like motherly vec, so I had a pad round in my Nadjoy Nogas, looking for A Clockwork Orange, which would be bound to have his Emia in, he being the author. There was nothing in my bedroom except a bed and a chair and a light, so I itted next door to this vec's own room, and there I vidded his wife on the wall, a bolshy, blown-up photo, so I felt a malenky bit sick remembering. But there were two or three shelves of books there too, and there was, as I thought there must be, a copy of A Clockwork Orange, and on the back of the book, like on the spine, was the author's Emia, F. Alexander. Good bog, I thought, he's another Alex. Then I leafed through, standing in my pyjamas and bare nogas, but not feeling one malenky bit cold, the cottage being warm all through, and I could not vidy what the book was about. It seemed written in a very Bazoomney-like style, full of R and O and all that cow. But what seemed to come out of it was that all ludies nowadays were being turned into machines, and that they were really, you and me and him and Kiss My Sherry's, more like a natural growth, like a fruit. F. Alexander seemed to think that we all like grow on what he called the world tree in the world orchard that like Bog or God planted, and we were there because Bog or God had need of us to quench his thirsty love or some such cow. I didn't like the shoom of this at all, I, my brothers, and I wondered how Bazoomney this F. Alexander really was, perhaps driven Bazoomney by his wife snuffing it. But then he called me down in a light sane vex gloss, full of joy and love and all that cow, so down your humble narrator went. "You've slept long," he said, ladling out boiled eggs and pulling black toast from under the grill. "It's nearly 10 already. I've been up for hours, working."
"Writing another book, sir?" I said.
"No, no, not that now," he said. And we sat down nice and droogy to the old crack, crack, crack of eggs and crackle, crunch, crunch of this black toast, very milky chai standing by in bolshy great morning mugs. "No, I've been on the phone to various people."
"I thought you didn't have a phone," I said,
spooning egg in and not watching out what I was saying. "Why?" he said, very alert, like some scorry animal with an egg spoon in its rooker. "Why shouldn't you think I have a phone?"
"Nothing," I said, "nothing,
nothing." And I wondered, brothers, how much he remembered of the earlier part of that distant notchy, me coming to the door with the old tale and saying to phone the doctor, and she saying, "No phone." He took a very close smot at me, but then went back to being like kind and cheerful and spooning up the old eggy-weg. Munching away, he said, "Yes, I've rung up various people who will be interested in your case. You can be a very potent weapon, you see, in ensuring that this present evil and wicked government is not returned in the forthcoming election. The government's big boast, you see, is the way it has dealt with crime these last months." He looked at me very close again over his steaming egg, and I wondered again if he was vidying what part I had so far played in his jeezney. But he said, "Recruiting brutal young roughs for the police, proposing debilitating and will-sapping techniques of conditioning,
all these long Slovos, brothers, and a like mad or bazoomly look in his glazies. "We've seen it all before," he said, "in other countries, the thin end of the wedge. Before we know where we are, we shall have the full apparatus of totalitarianism." "Dear, dear, dear," I thought, egging away and toast crunching. I said, "Where do I come into all this, sir?" "You," he said, still with this bazoomly look, "are a living witness to these diabolical proposals. The people, the common people, must know, must see." He got up from his breakfast and started to walk up and down the kitchen from the sink to the light larder, saying, very grumpy, "Would they like their sons to become what you, poor victim, have become? Will not the government itself now decide what is and what is not crime and pump out the life and guts and will of whoever sees fit to displease the government?" He became quieter but did not go back to his egg. "I've written an article," he said, "this morning while you were sleeping, that will be out in a day or so together with your unhappy picture. You shall sign it, poor boy, a record of what they've done to you." I said, "And what do you get out of all this, sir? I mean, besides the pretty Polly you'll get for the article, as you call it. I mean, why are you so hot and strong against this government, if I may make like so bold as to ask?" He gripped the edge of the table and said, gritting his zubies, which were very callow and all stained with cancer smoke, "Some of us have to fight. There are great traditions of liberty to defend. I am no partisan man. Where I see the infamy, I seek to erase it. Party names mean nothing. The tradition of liberty means all. The common people will let it go. Oh, yes. They will sell liberty for a quieter life. That is why they must be prodded, prodded." And here, brothers, he picked up a fork and stuck it two or three razzies into the wall so that it all got bent. Then he threw it on the floor. Very kindly, he said, "Eat well, poor boy, poor victim of the modern world." And I could vidi quite clear he was going off his Gulliver. "Eat, eat, eat my egg as well." But I said, "And what do I get out of this? Do I get cured of the way I am? Do I find myself able to slushy the old choral symphony without being sick once more? Can I live like a normal Jeezney again? What, sir, happens to me?" He looked at me, brothers, as if he hadn't thought of that before. And anyway, it didn't matter compared with liberty and all that cow, and he had a look of surprise at me saying what I said, as though I was being like selfish and wanting something for myself. Then he said, "Oh, as I say, you're a living witness, poor boy. Eat up all your breakfast, and then come and see what I've written, for it's going into the Weekly Trumpet under your name, you unfortunate victim." Well, brothers, what he had written was a very long and very weepy piece of writing, and as I read it, I felt very sorry for the poor Malchick who was gover-eating about his sufferings and how the government had sapped his will and how it was up to all ludies to not let such a rotten and evil government rule them again. And then, of course, I realised that the poor, suffering Malchick was none other than YHN. "Very good," I said. "Real horror show. Written well thou hast, O sir." And then he looked at me very narrow and said, "What?" It was like he had not slushied me before. "Oh, that," I said, "is what we call Nadsat talk. All the teens use that, sir." So then he itted off to the kitchen to wash up the dishes, and I was left in these borrowed night platties and twofles, waiting to have done to me what was going to be done to me, because I had no plans for myself, oh my brothers. While the great F. Alexander was in the kitchen, a ding-a-ling-a-ling came at the door. "Ah," he creaked, coming out, wiping his rookers. "It will be these people. I'll go." So he went and let them in, a kind of rumbling ha-ha-ha of talk and hello and filthy weather and how are things in the hallway. Then they itted into the room with the fire and the books and the article about how I had suffered. videoing me and going, ah, as they did it. There were three Ludies, and F. Alex gave me their emus. Z. Dolin was a very wheezy, smoky kind of a vec, coughing, kush, 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 with the end of a cancer in his rot, spilling ash all down his platties and then brushing it away with, like, very impatient rookers. He was a malenky round vec, fat, with big, thick-framed otches on. Then there was something-something Rubenstein, a very tall and polite cello vec with a real gentleman's galosse, very starry, with a, like, eggy beard. And lastly, there was D.B. Da Silva, who was like scorry in his movements and had this strong von of scent coming from him. They all had a horror show look at me and seemed like overjoyed with what they vidded. Zed Dolin said,
all right, eh? What a superb device he can be, this boy. If anything, of course, he could, for preference, look even iller and more zombie-ish than he does. Anything for the cause, no doubt we can think of something.
I did not like that crack about zombie-ish brothers, and so I said, what goes on, Bratties? What dost thou in mind for thy little droog have? And then F. Alexander swooshed in with, strange, strange, that manner of voice pricks me. We've come into contact before, I'm sure we have. And he brooded, like frowning. I would have to watch this, oh my brothers. D.B. Da Silva said, public meetings, mainly. To exhibit you at public meetings will be a tremendous help. And, of course, the newspaper angle is all tied up. A ruined life is the approach. We must inflame all hearts. He showed his 30-odd zubies, very white against his dark-coloured litzo. He looked a malenky bit like some foreigner. I said, nobody will tell me what I get out of all this. Tortured in jail, thrown out of my home by my own parents and their filthy overbearing lodger, beaten by old men and near killed by the Millicents. What is to become of me? The Rubenstein vec came in with, you will see, boy, that the party will not be ungrateful. Oh, no. At the end of it all, there will be some very acceptable little surprise for you. Just you wait and see. There's only one vesh I require, I creeched out, and that is to be normal and healthy as I was in the starry days, having my malenky bit of fun with real droogs and not those who just call themselves that and are really more like traitors. Can you do that, eh? Can any vet restore me to what I was? That's what I want, and that's what I want to know.
Cash, 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 coughed this said Dolin. A martyr to the cause of liberty, he said. You have your part to play, and don't forget it. Meanwhile, we shall look after you.
And he began to stroke my left rooker as if I was like an idiot, grinning in a bazoomny way. I creeched, stop treating me like a thing that's like got to be just used. I am not an idiot you can impose on, you stupid Brechneys. Ordinary Prestupniks are stupid, but I am not ordinary, and nor am I dim. Do you, Slushy? Dim, said F. Alexander, like musing. Dim. That was a name somewhere. Dim. Eh? I said. What's dim got to do with it? What do you know about dim? And then I said, oh, bog help us. I didn't like the look in F. Alexander's glazies. I made for the door, wanting to go upstairs and get my platties and then itty off. I could almost believe, said F. Alexander, showing his stained zubies, his glazies, mad. But such things are impossible, for by Christ, if he were, I'd tear him, I'd split him. By God, yes, yes, so I would. There, said D.B. Da Silva, stroking his chest like he was a doggy to calm him down. It's all in the past. It was other people altogether. We must help this poor victim. That's what we must do now, remembering the future and our cause. I'll just get my platties, I said, at the stair foot, that is to say, clothes, and then I'll be ittying off all on my oddy-nocky. I mean, my gratitude for all, but I have my own G's need to live, because, brothers, I wanted to get out of here real scorry. But Zed Dolin said,
no, we have you, friend, and we keep you. You come with us. Everything will be all right, you'll see."
And he came up to me, like to grab hold of my rooker again. Then, brothers, I thought of fight, but thinking of fight made me, like, want to collapse and sick, so I just stood. And then I saw this, like, madness in F. Alexander's glasses and said, "Whatever you say, I'm in your rookers. But let's get it started and all over, brothers, because what I wanted now was to get out of this mesto called home. I was beginning not to like the light look of the glazies of F. Alexander one malenki bit."
"Good," said this Rubenstein. "Get dressed and let's get started." "Dim, dim, dim," F. Alexander kept saying in a light low mutter. "What or who was this dim?" I itted upstairs real scorry and dressed in near 2 seconds flat. Then I was out with these three and into an auto, Rubenstein one side of me and Zed Dolan coughing, "Cash, cash, cash," the other side, D.B. De Silva doing the driving, into the town and to a flat block, not really all that distant from what had used to be my own flat block or home.
"Come, boy, out,"
said Zed Dolan, coughing to make the cancer end in his rot glow red like some malenki furnace.
"This is where you should be installed."
So we itted in, and there was, like, another of these dignity of labour veshes on the wall of the vestibule, and we upped in the lift, brothers, and then we went into a flat, like all the flats of all the flat blocks of the town, very, very malenki, with 2 bedrooms and 1 live-eat-workroom, the table of this all covered with books and papers and ink and bottles and all that cow.
"Here is your new home," said D.B. De Silva. "Settle here, boy. Food is in the food cupboard. Pyjamas are in the drawer. Rest, rest, perturbed spirit."
"Eh?" I said, not quite ponying that.
"All right," said Rubenstein with his starry galos.
"We are now leaving you. Work has to be done. We'll be with you later. Occupy yourself as best you can."
"One thing," coughed Zed Dolan. "Cash, cash, yes. You saw what stirred in the tortured memory of our friend F. Alexander. Was it, by any chance? That is to say, did you? I think you know what I mean. We won't let it go any further."
"I've paid," I said. "Bog knows, I've paid for what I did. I've paid not only for, like, myself, but for those Brechneys too that called themselves my droogs." I felt violent, so then I felt a bit sick. "I'll lay down a bit," I said. "I've been through terrible, terrible times."
"You have," said D.B. De Silva, showing all his 30 zubies. "You do that."
So they left me, brothers. They itted off about their business, which I took to be about politics and all that cow, and I was on the bed, all on my oddy knocky, with everything very, very quiet. I just laid there, with my sabogs kicked off my nogas and my tie loose, like all bewildered and not knowing what sort of a jeezny I was going to live now. And all sorts of, like, pictures kept, like, passing through my gulliver of the different Cheloveks I'd met at school and in the stadger and the different veshes that had happened to me, and how there was not one vet you could trust in the whole Bolshy world. And then I, like, dozed off, brothers. When I woke up, I could slushy music coming out of the wall, real grumpy, and it was that that had dragged me out of my bit of, like, sleep. It was a symphony that I knew, real horror show, but had not slushied for many a year, namely the Symphony No. 3 of the Danish feck Otto Skadelig, a very grumpy and violent piece, especially in the first movement, which was what was playing now. I slushied for 2 seconds in, like, interest and joy, but then it all came over me, the start of the pain and the sickness, and I began to groan deep down in my kishkas, and then there I was, me who had loved music so much, crawling off the bed and going, oh, 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 to myself, and then bang, bang, banging on the wall, screeching, stop, stop it, turn it off. But it went on, and it seemed to be, like, louder, so I crashed at the wall till my knuckles were all red, red, crovy and torn skin, screeching and screeching, but the music did not stop. Then I thought, I had to get away from it, so I lurched out of the Malenki bedroom and itted scurry to the front door of the flat, but this had been locked from the outside and I could not get out. And all the time, the music got more and more grumpy, like it was all a deliberate torture, oh my brothers. So I stuck my little fingers real deep in my ukos, but the trombones and kettle drums blasted through grumpy enough. So I screeched again for them to stop and went hammer, hammer, hammer on the wall, but it made not one Malenki bit of difference. Oh, what am I to do? I boo-hooed to myself. Oh, bog in heaven, help me! I was like wandering all over the flat in pain and sickness, trying to shut out the music and like groaning deep out of my guts. And then on top of the pile of books and papers and all that cow that was on the table in the living room, I vidded what I had to do and what I had wanted to do until those old men in the public biblio and then Dim and Billy Boy disguised as Rosses stopped me. And that was to do myself in. To snuff it, to blast off forever out of this wicked and cruel world. What I vidded was the Slovo Death on the cover of a light pamphlet, even though it was only Death to the Government, and like it was fate that there was another light Malenki booklet which had an open window on the cover, and it said, open the window to fresh air, fresh ideas, a new way of living. And so I knew that it was like telling me to finish it all off by jumping out. One moment of pain, perhaps, and then sleep forever and ever and ever. The music was still pouring in, all brass and drums and the violins miles up through the wall. The window in the room where I had laid down was open. I itted to it, and vidded a fair drop to the autos and buses and walking Cheloviks below. I screeched out to the world, goodbye, goodbye, may Bog forgive you for a ruined life. Then I got onto the sill, the music blasting away to my left, and I shut my glazies and felt the cold wind on my litso. Then I jumped. 6. I jumped, oh my brothers, and I fell on the sidewalk hard, but I did not snuff it, oh no. If I had snuffed it, I would not be here to write what I written have. It seems that the jump was not from a big enough height to kill, but I cracked my back and my wrists and nogas and felt very bolshy pain before I passed out, brothers, with astonished and surprised litzos of Cheloviks in the street looking at me from above. And just before I passed out, I vidded clear that not one Chelovek in the whole horrid world was for me, and that the music through the wall had all been like arranged by those who were supposed to be like my new droogs, and that it was some vesh like this that they wanted for their horrible, selfish and boastful politics. All that was in like a million millionth part of one minuta before I threw over the world and the sky and the litzos of the staring Cheloviks that were above me. Where I was when I came back to Jizni, after a long black, black gap of it might have been a million years, was a hospital, all white, and with this von of hospitals you get, all like sour and smug and clean. These antiseptic veshes you get in hospitals should have a real horror show von of like frying onions or of flowers. I came very slow back to knowing who I was, and I was all bound up in white and could not feel anything in my plot, pain nor sensation nor any vesh at all. All round my gulliver was a bandage, and there were bits of stuff, like, stuck to my litzo, and my rookers were all in bandages, and, like, bits of stick were, like, fixed to my fingers, like, on it might be flowers to make them grow straight, and my poor old nogas were all straightened out too, and it was all bandages and wire cages, and into my right rooker, near the plecho, was red, red crovy dripping from a jar upside down. But I could not feel anything, oh my brothers. There was a nurse sitting by my bed, and she was reading some book that was all like very dim print, and you could vidy it was a story because of a lot of inverted commas, and she was like breathing hard, over it, so it must have been a story about the old in-out, in-out. She was a real horror show devotchka, this nurse, with a very red rot and, like, long lashes over her glasses, and under her, like, very stiff uniform, you could vidy she had very horror show grudies. So I said to her, "What gives, oh my little sister? Come now and have a nice lay down with your malenki droog in this bed." But the Slovos didn't come out horror show at all, it being as though my rot was all stiffened up. And I could feel with my yarzik that some of my zubies were no longer there. But this nurse, like, jumped and dropped her book on the floor and said, "Oh, you've recovered consciousness." That was like a big rot fall for a malenki petitza like her, and I tried to say so, but the Slovos came out only like, She itted off and left me on my oddy knocky, and I could vidy now that I was in a malenki room of my own. Not in one of these long wards like I had been in as a very little malchick, full of coughing, dying, starry vex all round to make you want to get well and fit again. It had been like diphtheria I had had then, oh my brothers. It was like now as though I could not hold to being conscious all that long because I was like asleep again, almost right away, very scorry, but in a minuta or two, I was sure that this nurse petitza had come back and had brought Cheleveks in white coats with her, and they were vidying me, very frowning, and going, at your humble narrator. And with them, I was sure there was the old Charles from the Stadger, govereating, "Oh, my son, my son." Breathing a, like, very stale von of whiskey onto me and then saying, "But I would not stay. Oh, no, I could not in no wise subscribe to what those Brachneys are going to do to other poor Prestupniks. So I got out, and I am preaching sermons now about it all, my little beloved son in J.C." I woke up again later on, and who should I vidy there round the bed but the three from whose flat I had jumped out, namely D.B. de Silva and something-something Rubenstein and Z. Dolin. "Friend," one of these vex was saying, but I could not vidy or slushy horror show which one. "Friend, little friend," this Goloss was saying, "the people are on fire with indignation. You have killed these horrible, boastful villains' chances of re-election. They will go and will go for ever and ever. You have served liberty well." I tried to say, "If I had died, it would have been even better for you political Brachneys, would it not, pretending and treacherous droogs that you are?" But all that came out was, Then one of these three seemed to hold out a lot of bits cut from gazettas, and what I could vidy was a horrible picture of me, all crovy, on a stretcher being carried off, and I seem to like remember a kind of a popping of light, which must have been photographer vex. Out of one glass, I could read like headlines, which were sort of trembling in the rooker of the Chelovic that held them, like, "Boy victim of criminal reform scheme," and "Government as murderer," and then there was like a picture of a vet that looked familiar to me, and it said, "Out, out, out," and that would be the Minister of the Inferior or Interior. Then the nurse petitza said, "You shouldn't be exciting him like that. You shouldn't be doing anything that will make him upset. Now, come on, let's have you out." I tried to say, "Out, out, out," but it was, again. Anyway, these three political vets went. And I went, too, only back to the land. Back to all blackness, lit up by like odd dreams which I didn't know whether they were dreams or not, oh my brothers. Like, for instance, I had this idea of my whole plot or body being like emptied of, as it might be, dirty water and then filled up again with clean. And then there were really lovely and horror show dreams of being driven in some vex auto that had been crasted by me and driving up and down the world all on my oddy knocky, running ludies down and hearing them creech they were dying, and in me no pain and no sickness. And also there were dreams of doing the old in-out with devotchkas, forcing them like down on the ground and making them have it, and everybody standing round clapping their rookers and cheering like Bazoomni. And then I woke up again, and it was my P and M come to vidy their ill son, my M boo-hooing real horror show. I could gover eat a lot better now and could say, "Well, well, 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 what gives? What makes you think you are like welcome?" My papa said in a like ashamed way, "You were in the papers, son. It said they'd done great wrong to you. It said how the government drove you to try and do yourself in. And it was our fault too, in a way, son. Your home's your home when all's said and done, son." And my mum kept on going boo-hoo-hoo and looking ugly as kiss my sharries. So I said, "And how be'th thy new son, Joe? Well and healthy and prosperous, I trust and pray?" My mum said, "Oh, Alex, Alex, oh." My papa said, "A very awkward thing, son. He got into a bit of trouble with the police and was done by the police." "Really?" I said, "really? Such a good sort of chelovec and all. Amazed proper I am, honest." "Minding his own business, he was," said my P, "and the police told him to move on. Waiting at a corner he was, son, to see a girl he was going to meet, and they told him to move on, and he said he had rights like everybody else, and then they sort of fell on top of him and hit him about cruel." "Terrible," I said, "really terrible. And where is the poor boy now?"
"Oh,"
boo-hooed my mum,
"gone back home."
"Yes," said Dad, "he's gone back to his own hometown to get better. They've had to give his job here to somebody else."
"So now," I said, "you're willing for me to move back in again and things be like they were before?"
"Yes, son," said my papa, "please, son."
"I'll consider it," I said. "I'll think about it real careful."
"Ow,"
went my mum.
"Oh, shut it," I said, "or I'll give you something proper to yowl and creech about. Kick your zoobies in, I will."
And, oh my brothers, saying that made me feel a malenky bit better, as if all like fresh red crovy was flowing all through my plot. That was something I had to think about. It was like as though to get better, I had to get worse.
"That's no way to speak to your mother, son," said my papa. "After all, she brought you into the world."
"Yes," I said, "and a right grasny vonny world too." I shut my glazies tight in like pain and said, "Go away now. I'll think about coming back, but things will have to be very different."
"Yes, son," said my P, "anything you say."
"You'll have to make up your mind," I said, "who's to be boss."
"Ow,"
my mum went on.
"Very good, son," said my papa. "Things will be as you like. Only get well."
When they had gone, I laid and thought a bit about different veshes, like all different pictures passing through my gulliver. And when the nurse Petitza came back in and like straightened the sheets on the bed, I said to her, "How long is it I've been in here?"
"A week or so," she said.
"And what have they been doing to me?"
"Well," she said, "you were all broken up and bruised and had sustained severe concussion and had lost a lot of blood. They've had to put all that right, haven't they?"
"But," I said, "has anyone been doing anything with my gulliver? What I mean is, Have they been playing around with inside, like, my brain?
Whatever they've done, she said, it'll all be for the best.
But a couple of days later, a couple of, like, doctor vets came in, both youngish vets with these, like, very slaggy smiles, and they had, like, a picture book with them. One of them said,
we want you to have a look at these and to tell us what you think about them, all right?
What giveth, O little droogies, I said. What new Bazoomni idea dost thou in mind have? So they both, like, had an embarrassed smack at that, and then they sat down either side of the bed and opened up this book. On the first page, there was, like, a photograph of a bird nest full of eggs.
Yes, one of these Dr. Vex said.
A bird nest, I said, full of, like, eggs. Very, very nice.
And what would you like to do about it?
The other one said.
Oh, I said, smash them.
Pick up the lot and, like, throw them against a wall or a cliff or something and then vidy them all smashed up, real horror show.
Good, good, they both said. And then the page was turned. It was like a picture of one of these bolshy great birds called peacocks with all its tails spread out in all colours in a very boastful way.
Yes, said one of these Vex. I would like, I said, to pull out, like, all those feathers in its tail and slushy it Creech Blue Murder for being so, like, boastful.
Good, they both said. Good, good, good.
And they went on, turning the pages. There were, like, pictures of real horror show devotchkas, and I said I would like to give them the old in-out, in-out with lots of ultraviolence. There were, like, pictures of Chelovex being given the boot straight in the litso and all red, red crovy everywhere, and I said I would like to be in on that. And there was a picture of the old Nadjoy Droog of the prison Charlies carrying his cross up a hill, and I said I would like to have the old hammer and nails.
Good, good, good.
I said, what is all this?
Deep hypnopedia,
or some such slovo, said one of these two Vex.
You seem to be cured.
Cured? I said. Me tied down to this bed like this, and you say cured? Kiss my showers is what I say.
Wait, said the other one. It won't be long now.
So I waited, and oh, my brothers, I got a lot better, munching away at eggy wegs and lomticks of toast and peating bolshy great mugs of milky chai, and then one day they said that I was going to have a very, very, very special visitor.
Who?
I said, while they straightened the bed and combed my luscious glory for me having the bandage off now from my Gulliver and the hair growing again.
You'll see, they said.
And I vidded all right. At 2:30 of the afternoon, there were all light photographers and men from gazetters with notebooks and pencils and all that cow, and brothers, they near trumpeted a bolshy fanfare for this great and important vet who was coming to vidy your humble narrator, and in he came. And of course it was none other than the Minister of the Interior, or Inferior, dressed in the height of fashion, and with this very upper-class ho-ho-ho-ho-ho galos. Flash, flash, bang, went the cameras when he put out his rooker to me to shake it. I said, well, 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 what giveth then, old droogie? Nobody seemed to quite pony that, but somebody said in a, like, harsh galos, be more respectful, boy, in addressing the minister.
Yarbles, I said, like snarling like a doggie. Bolshy great yar blockos to thee and thine.
All right, said the interior inferior one, very scorry. He speaks to me as a friend, don't you, son?
I'm everyone's friend, I said, except to my enemies.
And who are your enemies? Said the minister, while all the Gazettevex went scribble, scribble, scribble. Tell us that, my boy.
All who do me wrong, I said, are my enemies.
Well, said the int imp min, sitting down by my bed, I and the government of which I am a member want you to regard us as friends. Yes, friends. We have put you right, yes? You are getting the best of treatment. We never wished you harm, but there are some who did and do, and I think you know who those are.
All who do me wrong, I said, are my enemies.
Yes, 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 he said. There are certain men who wanted to use you, yes, use you for political ends.
They would have been glad, yes, glad, for you to be dead, for they thought they could then blame it all on the government. I think you know who those men are.
I did not, I said, like the look of them.
There is a man, said the Imp Min, called F. Alexander, a writer of subversive literature, who has been howling for your blood. He has been mad with desire to stick a knife in you. But you're safe from him now. We put him away.
He was supposed to be like a droogie, I said. Like a mother to me, was what he was.
He found out that you had done wrong to him. At least, said the Min, very, very scorry, he believed you had done wrong. He formed this idea in his mind that you had been responsible for the death of someone near and dear to him.
What you mean, I said, is that he was told.
He had this idea, said the Min. He was a menace. We put him away for his own protection, and also, he said, for yours. Kind, I said, most kind of thou. When you leave here, said the Min, you will have no worries. We shall see to everything, a good job on a good salary, because you are helping us.
Am I? I said.
We always help our friends, don't we? And then he took my rooker and some vet creeched, smile, and I smiled like Bazoomney without thinking, and then flash, flash, crack, flash, bang, there were pictures being taken of me and the Intimph Min all droogy together. Good boy, said this great Chelovec, good, good boy, and now see a present. What was brought in now, brothers, was a big, shiny box, and I vidded clear what sort of a vesh it was. It was a stereo. It was put down next to the bed and opened up, and some vet plugged in its lead into the wall socket. What shall it be? Asked a vet with otches on his nose. And then he had in his rookers lovely, shiny sleeves full of music. Mozart, Beethoven, Schoenberg, Karl Orff. The ninth, I said, the glorious ninth. And the ninth it was, oh my brothers. Everybody began to leave nice and quiet while I laid there with my glasses closed, slooshying the lovely music. The Min said, good, good boy, patting me on the plecho. Then he itted off. Only one vet was left, saying, sign here, please. I opened my glasses up to sign, not knowing what I was signing and not, oh my brothers, caring either. Then I was left alone with the glorious ninth of Ludwig van.
Oh, it was gorgiosity and yum, yum, yum. When it came to the scherzo, I could vidy myself very clear, running and running on light, very light and mysterious nogas, carving the whole litzo of the creeching world with my cutthroat Britva. And there was the slow movement, and the lovely last singing movement still to come. I was cured all right.
7. What's it going to be then, eh? There was me, your humble narrator, and my three droogs, that is Len, Rick and Bully. Bully being called Bully because of his bolshy big neck and very gromky galos, which was just like some bolshy great bull bellowing, ugh. We were sitting in the Corova milk bar making up our razudox what to do with the evening, a flip dark chill winter bastard, though dry. All round were Cheloveks well away on milk plus Velocet and Synthmesk and Drencrom and other veshies which take you far, far, far away from this wicked and real world into the land. To Vidy Bog and all his holy angels and saints in your left sabog with light bursting and spurting all over your mosque. What we were peating was the old maloko with knives in it, as we used to say, to sharpen you up and make you ready for a bit of dirty 20-1, but I've told you all that before. We were dressed in the height of fashion, which in those days was these very wide trousers and a very loose black shiny leather-like jerkin over an open-necked shirt with a like scarf tucked in. At this time, too, It was the height of fashion to use the old Britva on the Gulliver so that most of the Gulliver was like bald and there was hair only on the sides. But it was always the same on the old Nogas. Real horror show bolshy big boots for kicking litzos in.
What's it going to be then, eh?
I was like the oldest of we four, and they all looked up to me as their leader, but I got the idea sometimes that Bully had the thought in his Gulliver that he would like to take over, this being because of his bigness and the gromky galos that bellowed out of him when he was on the warpath. But all the ideas came from your humble, oh my brothers, and also there was this fesh that I had been famous and had had my picture and articles and all that cow in the gazettas. Also, I had by far the best job of all we four, being in the National Grammo Disc archives on the music side with a real horror show Carmen full of Pretty Polly at the week's end and a lot of nice free discs for my own Malenki self on the side. This evening in the Korova, there was a fair number of Vex and Petitsas and Dvochkas and Malchiks smecking and peating away and cutting through their govereating and the burbling of the inlanders with their gorgol falatuk and the worm sprays in filtip slaughter balls and all that cow. You could slushy a pop disc on the stereo, this being Ned Achimota singing That Day, Yeah, That Day. At the counter were three Dvochkas dressed in the height of Nadsat fashion. That is to say, long uncombed hair, dyed white and false grudies sticking out a metre or more and very, very tight short skirts with all like frothy white underneath. And Bully kept saying,
"Hey, get in there, we could, three of us. Old Len is not interested. Leave old Len alone with his god."
And Len kept saying, "Yarbles, yarbles, where is the spirit of all for one and one for all, eh, boy?" Suddenly, I felt both very, very tired and also full of tingly energy, and I said,
"Out, out, 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 out!"
"Where to?"
said Rick, who had a litzo like a frog's.
"Oh, just to vidy what's going on in the great outside," I said. But somehow, my brothers, I felt very bored and a bit hopeless, and I had been feeling that a lot these days. So I turned to the Chelovek nearest me on the big plush seat that ran right round the whole mesto, a Chelovek, that is, who was burbling away under the influence, and I fisted him real scorry, ack, 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 in the belly. But he felt it not, brothers, only burbling away with his cart, cart virtue, wherein top tails lieth the poppy, poppy corns. So we scattered out into the big winter notchy. We walked down Margarita Boulevard, and there were no Millicents patrolling that way, so when we met a starry vet coming away from a news kiosk where he had been cuppeting a gazetta, I said to Bully, "All right, Bully boy, thou canst, if thou like, wishest." More and more these days, I had been just giving the orders and standing back to vidy them being carried out. So Bully cracked into him, and the other two tripped him and kicked him, smecking away while he was down, and then let him crawl off to where he lived, like whimpering to himself. Bully said,
"How about a nice yummy glass of something to keep out the cold, oh Alex?"
For we were not too far from the Duke of New York. The other two nodded, "Yes, yes, yes," but all looked at me to vidy whether that was all right. I nodded too, and so off we itted. Inside the snug, there were these starry petitsas or sharps or babushkas you will remember from the beginning, and they all started on their,
"Evening, lads, God bless you, boys. Best lads living, that's what you are,"
waiting for us to say, "What's it going to be, girls?" Bully rang the collar call and a waiter came in rubbing his rookers on his grazzy apron. "Cutter on the tables, droogies," said Bully, pulling out his own rattling and chinking mound of deng.
"Scotchman for us and the same for the old babushkas, eh?"
And then I said, "Oh, to hell. Let them buy their own." I didn't know what it was, but these last days I'd become, like, mean. There had come into my Gulliver a like desire to keep all my pretty Polly to myself, to like hoard it all up for some reason. Bully said,
"What gives, Bratty? What's coming over old Alex?"
"Ah, to hell," I said. "I don't know, I don't know. What it is I don't like just throwing away my hard-earned pretty Polly, that's what it is."
"Earned," said Rick, "earned? It doesn't have to be earned, as well thou knowest, old droogie. Took, that's all, just took, like."
And he smacked real grumpy, and I vidded one or two of his zoobies weren't all that horror show. "Ah," I said, "I've got some thinking to do." But viddying these babushkas looking all eager-like for some free alk, I like shrugged my plechos and pulled out my own cutter from my trouser carmen, notes and coin all mixed together, and plonked it, tinkle-crackle, on the table.
"Scotchman all round, right?" said the waiter.
But for some reason, I said, "No, boy, for me, make it one small beer, right?" Len said, "This I do not much go for," and he began to put his rooker on my Gulliver, like kidding I must have a fever. But I like snarled doggy-wise for him to give over scurry.
All right, Droog," he said, "as thou like sayest."
But Bully was having a smot with his rot open at something that had come out of my carmen with the pretty Polly I'd put on the table. He said,
"Well, well, well, and we never knew."
"Give me that," I snarled and grabbed its scurry. I couldn't explain how it had got there, brothers, but it was a photograph I had scissored out of the old Gazetta, and it was of a baby. It was of a baby gurgling goo 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 with all like maloko dribbling from its rot and looking up and like smacking at everybody, and it was all nadjoy, and its flesh was like in folds with being a very fat baby. There was then like a bit of haw 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 struggling to get hold of this bit of paper from me, so I had to snarl again at them, and I grabbed the photo and tore it up into tiny teeny pieces and let it fall like a bit of snow onto the floor. The whiskey came in then, and the starry babushkas said, "Good health, lads, God bless you boys, the best lads living, that's what you are," and all that cow. And one of them, who was all lines and wrinkles and no zoobies in her shrunken old rot, said,
"Don't tear up money, son. If you don't need it, give it them as does."
Which was very bold and forward of her. But Rick said, "Money, that was not, O babushka. It was a picture of a dear itsy-witsy-bitsy bit of a baby." I said,
"I'm getting just that bit tired that I am. It's you who's the babies, you lot, scoffing and grinning, and all you can do is smack and give people bolshy, cowardly toll chocks when they can't give them back."
Bully said,
"Well now, we always thought it was you who was the king of that, and also the teacher."
"Not well, that's the trouble with thou, old droogie." I vidded this sloppy glass of beer I had on the table in front of me and felt like all vomity within, so I went, "Ah," and pulled all the frothy vonny cowl all over the floor. One of the starry petitzers said, "Waste not, want not." I said, "Look, droogies, listen, tonight I am somehow just not in the mood. I know not why or how it is, but there it is. You three, go your own ways this night wise, leaving me out. Tomorrow, we shall meet, same place, same time, me hoping to be, like, a lot better."
"Oh," said Bully, "right sorry I am."
But you could viddy a light gleam in his glazies, because now he would be taking over for this notchy.
Power, power, everybody, like, wants power.
"We can postpone till tomorrow," said Bully, "what we in mind had, namely that bit of shopcrasting in Gagarin Street. Flip horror show takings there, Droog, for the having."
"No," I said, "you postpone nothing. You just carry on in your own light style."
"Now," I said, "I itty off." And I got up from my chair.
"Where to then?" asked Rick.
"That know I not," I said, "just to be on light my own.
and sort things out?
You could vidy the old babushkas were real puzzled at me going out like that and like all morose and not the bright and smecking malchicky wick you will remember, but I said, ah, to hell, and scattered out all on my oddy knocky into the street. It was dark and there was a wind sharp as a noz getting up and there were very, very few loodies about. There were these patrol cars with brutal Rosses inside them like cruising about and now and then on the corner you would vidy a couple of very young millicents stamping against the bitchy cold and letting out steam breath on the winter air, oh my brothers. I suppose, really, a lot of the old ultra-violence and crasting was dying out now, the Rosses being so brutal with who they caught, though it had become like a fight between naughty Nadsats and the Rosses who could be more scorry with the Noz and the Britfa and the stick and even the gun. But what was the matter with me these days was that I didn't, like, care very much. It was like something soft getting into me, and I could not pony why. What I wanted these days, I did not know. Even the music I liked to slushy in my own malenki den, what I would have smecked at before, brothers. I was slushying more like malenki romantic songs, what they call lieder, just a galosh and a piano. Very quiet and, like, yearny. Different from when it had been all Bolshy orchestras and me lying on the bed between the violins and the trombones and kettle drums. There was something happening inside me, and I wondered if it was like some disease or if it was what they had done to me that time upsetting my Gulliver and perhaps going to make me real bazoomny. So, thinking like this, with my Gulliver bent and my rookers stuck in my trouser carmens, I walked the town, brothers, and at last I began to feel very tired and also in great need of a nice Bolshy chasha of milky chai. Thinking about this chai, I got a sudden, like, picture of me sitting before a Bolshy fire in an armchair, peating away at this chai, and what was funny and very, very strange was that I seemed to have turned into a very starry Chelovic, about 70 years old, because I could vidy my own velos, which was very grey, and I also had whiskers, and these were very grey too. I could vidy myself as an old man sitting by a fire. And then the light picture vanished, but it was very, like, strange. I came to one of these tea and coffee mestos, brother, and I could vidy through the long, long window that it was full of very dull loodies, like ordinary, who had these very patient and expressionless litzos and would do no harm to no one, all sitting there and gover eating, like, quietly and peating away at their nice, harmless chai and coffee. I itted inside and went up to the counter and bought me a nice hot chai with plenty of maloko. Then I itted to one of these tables and sat down to peat it. There was like a young couple at this table, peating and smoking filter-tip cancers and gover-eating and smecking very quietly between themselves, but I took no notice of them and just went on peating away and, like, dreaming and wondering what it was in me that was, like, changing and what was going to happen to me. But I vidded that the Devotchka on this table, who was with this Chelovic, was real horror show. Not the sort you would want to, like, throw down and give the old in-out to, but with a horror show plot and litzo and a smiling rot and very, very fair velos and all that cow. And then the Vec with her, who had a hat on his Gulliver and had his litzo, like, turned away from me, swivelled round to vidy the bolshy big clock they had on the wall in this mesto, and then I vidied who he was. And then he vidied who I was. It was Pete, one of my three droogs from those days when it was Georgie and Dim and him and me. It was Pete, like, looking a lot older, though he could not be now more than 19 and a bit, and he had a bit of a moustache and an ordinary day suit and this hat on. I said, well, droogie, what gives?
Very, very long time no viddy. He said, it's little Alex, isn't it? None other, I said. A long, long, long time since those dead and gone good days. And now poor Georgie, they told me, is underground, and old Dim is a brutal Millicent, and here is thou, and here is I. And what news hast thou, old Droogie? He talks funny, doesn't he? Said this Dvotchka, like giggling. This, said Pete to the Dvotchka, is an old friend. His name is Alex. May I, he said to me, introduce my wife? My rot fell wide open then. Wife? I like gaped. Wife? 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 Oh, no, that cannot be. Too young art thou to be married, old Droog, impossible, impossible. This Dvotchka, who was like Pete's wife, impossible, impossible, giggled again and said to Pete, did you used to talk like that too? Well, said Pete, and he like smiled, I'm nearly 20, old enough to be hitched, and it's been 2 months already. You were very young and very forward, remember? Well, I like gaped still. Over this get, can I not, old Droogie? Pete married. Well, well, well. We have a small flat, said Pete. I am earning very small money at State Marine Insurance, but things will get better, that I know. And Georgina here, what again is that name? I said, rot still open like Bazoomney. Pete's wife, wife. Brothers, like, giggled again. Georgina, said Pete. Georgina works too. Typing, you know, we manage. We manage. I could not, brothers, take my glasses off him, really. He was, like, grown up now, with a grown-up galos and all. You must, said Pete, come and see us sometime. You still, he said, look very young, despite all your terrible experiences. Yes, 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 we've read all about them. But, of course, you are very young still. 18, I said, just gone. 18, eh, said Pete, as old as that. Well, well, well. Now, he said, we have to be going. And he, like, gave this Georgina of his a, like, loving look and pressed one of her rookers between his, and she gave him one of these looks back, oh, my brothers. Yes, said Pete, turning back to me. We're off to a little party at Greg's. Greg? I said. Oh, of course, said Pete. You wouldn't know Greg, would you? Greg is after your time. While you were away, Greg came into the picture. He runs little parties, you know, mostly wine cup and word games, but very nice, very pleasant, you know. Harmless, if you see what I mean. Yes, I said. Harmless, yes, yes, I vidy that real horror show. And this Georgina Dvotchka giggled again at my Slovos. And then these two itted off to their vonny word games at this Greg's, whoever he was. I was left all on my oddy knocky with my milky chai, which was getting cold now, like thinking and wondering. Perhaps that was it, I kept thinking. Perhaps I was getting too old for the sort of jeezney I'd been leading, brothers. I was 18 now, just gone. 18 was not a young age. At 18, old Wolfgang Amadeus had written concertos and symphonies and operas and oratorios and all that cow. No, not cow, heavenly music. And then there was old Felix M. with his Midsummer Night's Dream overture. And there were others. And there was this, like, French poet set by old Benji Britt, who had done all his best poetry by the age of 15, oh, my brothers. Arthur. His first name. 18 was not all that young an age then. But what was I going to do? Walking the dark chill bastards of winter streets after ittying off from this chai and coffee mesto, I kept vidying like visions, like these cartoons in the gazettas. There was your humble narrator Alex coming home from work to a good hot plate of dinner. And there was this Petitza, all welcoming and greeting like loving. But I could not vidy her all that horror show, brothers. I could not think who it might be. but I had this sudden, very strong idea that if I walked into the room next to this room where the fire was burning and my hot dinner laid on the table, there I should find what I really wanted. And now it all tied up. That picture scissored out of the Gazetta and meeting old Pete like that. For in that other room, in a cot, was laying, gurgling, goo, 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 my son. Yes, 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 brothers, my son. And now I felt this bolshy big hollow inside my plot, feeling very surprised too at myself. I knew what was happening, oh my brothers. I was like growing up. Yes, 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 there it was. Youth must go. Ah, yes. But youth is only being, in a way, like it might be an animal. No, it is not just like being an animal so much as being like one of these malenki toys you vidi being sold in the streets, like little cheloviks made out of tin and with a spring inside and then a winding handle on the outside. And you wind it up, grr, 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 and off it itties like walking, oh my brothers. But it itties in a straight line and bangs straight into things, bang, bang, and it cannot help what it is doing. Being young is like being like one of these malenki machines. My son. My son. When I had my son, I would explain all that to him when he was starry enough to, like, understand. But then I knew he would not understand or would not want to understand at all and would do all the veshes I had done, yes, perhaps even killing some poor starry forella surrounded with mewing cots and koshkas, and I would not be able to really stop him. And nor would he be able to stop his own son, brothers. And so it would itty on to, like, the end of the world, round and round and round, like some bolshy gigantic, like Chelovic, like Old Bog himself, by courtesy of Korova Milk Bar, turning and turning and turning a vonny, grasny orange in his gigantic rookers. But first of all, brothers, there was this vesh of finding some devotchka or other who would be a mother to this son. I would have to start on that tomorrow, I kept thinking. That was something like new to do. That was something I would have to get started on. A new, like, chapter beginning. That's what it's going to be then, brothers, as I come to the, like, end of this tale. You have been everywhere with your little droog, Alex. Suffering with him, and you have vidded some of the most grasny brachnies Old Bog ever made, all on to your old droog Alex. And all it was that I was young. But now, as I end this story, brothers, I am not young. Not no longer, oh no. Alex, like, groweth up, oh yes. But where I itty now, O my brothers, is all on my oddy knocky, where you cannot go. Tomorrow is all like sweet flowers and the turning vonny earth and the stars and the old lunar up there and your old droog Alex all on his oddy knocky seeking like a mate and all that cow. A terrible, grasny, vonny world, really, O my brothers. And so farewell from your little droog. And to all others in this story, profound shooms of lip music. And they can kiss my sherries. But you, O my brothers, remember sometimes thy little Alex that was. Amen. And all that cow.
The End. You've been listening to A Clockwork Orange by Anthony Burgess, narrated by Tom Hollander, with the introduction by Anthony Burgess read by me, your host, Stephen Crossley. If you've enjoyed this book and this performance, Recorded Books recommends Norwegian Wood by Haruki Murakami, Translated from the Japanese by J. Rubin and narrated by James Yayagashi. Toru, a quiet and preternaturally serious young college student in 1960s Tokyo, is devoted to Naoko, a beautiful and introspective young woman. But their mutual obsession is marked by the tragic death of their best friend years before. Toru begins to adapt to campus life and the loneliness and isolation he faces there, but Naoko finds the pressures and responsibilities of life unbearable. As she retreats further into her own world, Toru finds himself reaching out to others and is drawn to a fiercely independent and sexually liberated young woman. This stunning and elegiac novel propelled Haruki Murakami into the forefront of the literary scene and showed that the master genre bender could tug at our heartstrings as effectively as the Beatles song, Norwegian Wood. You'll find a wide selection of titles in the Recorded Books catalogue, including bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more. Call us toll-free or log on to www.recordedbooks.com to learn about our latest releases and special offers, order another recorded book, or to read author interviews and narrator profiles. Don't forget to ask about easy 30-day rentals by mail. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.